accession number 268044, reel 3.
Mr. Blake, reel 3. We got to the point where you got to, on the Queen Elizabeth to Port Tewfik, and you got there 19th of July 1942. What were your first impressions when you got there? Because it's your first, you know, it's a new place, very foreign compared to what you were used to.
Yeah, looking round all the time, and so many new sights to see, and know that one or two Arabs were coming round and looking at us, and they were curious at looking at us as we were at them. But I suppose quite impressed, really, you know, that because there's lots of green. It's the Nile Delta, so it's very green there, and quite impressed with it, really.
So what happened?
And then we went. Well, when we landed, we went up to Baraj, a place called Baraj, which. You could see the pyramids from, although somewhere in the distance. And this was a toughening up course, and this was a bottle of water a day job. You just got a bottle of water a day for doing everything, you know, which was we found pretty tough at first, although because it served us well in future times that we knew how to what to drink and what or how much to drink and what not to drink, you know. And I was there for about a week, and then
were you doing anything else, or was it just the drink?
Well, we just in these little tents. I think we must have. We had a few talks about tropical diseases and don't go too near the ladies and that sort of thing. Just general things. And I think we'd done quite a lot of marching there. We had to wear your topi as well all the time. I think we've done quite a lot of marching there.
What, in the desert?
In Baraj, which wasn't the desert really, because it's very green there. And that was a fitness thing, probably, that we'd had a month where we hadn't done very much on the QE. And so that was the sort of fitness up. And then I say, after about a week, these trucks came down to pick us up, and then we were heading for what was known as the Blue. That was up in the desert. It was always called the Blue. And there I joined 288 Company. Now, 288 Company was a transport company with 3-ton Chevrolets.
So you joined them. That would it still be July, or would it have moved into August?
Probably moved into August then, yeah.
And where were they when you joined them?
They was at a place called El Hammam, which is, say, I think probably about 30 mile behind El Alamein, that was, and about 50 mile from Alexandria.
And what were your first impressions of the unit? You know, when you got there, what did you know? Was it just you or the whole squad?
The squad was split up actually into so many to each of the companies. You see, because 288 Company only had 3 platoons then, 7, 8, and 9, which, and a platoon consisted of five sections, I think it was, of 6 vehicles. So there was 30 vehicles in each platoon. And so not all W Squad went there. There was a few of W Squad went there, but I can't remember. But I stayed with my friend Frankie Brooks. We were still together. And we joined, the section we joined was by a Welsh fellow named Corporal Lovering. He was in charge.
Corporal?
Lovering.
Lovering?
Yeah, it was a Welsh fellow. Corporal Lovering. So we had 6 trucks. 6 drivers, a corporal and a lance corporal Nobby Clark. But I'm sorry, I'll say that again. There was 5 drivers, and Nobby Clark was a lance corporal driver. So there were 7 at all in this section.
And what were your first impressions of them? What did you think of them as a bunch of lads and as a military unit?
Bewildered, I think, really. That there was so much space and what we're doing here, sort of thing. I always felt.
What did you think of them? Do you know the men you were joining?
Oh, they're very friendly. Yeah. Although they, you know, they used to crack on about they're sending the kids out now to do the fighting. You know, because these people had been up and down the desert perhaps a couple of times. You know, so we were, you know, we was 19-year-olds coming out, and we used to say, yeah, we're only come out to show you how to win the war, because we did in the end, didn't we? Yeah. So. No, they was all, you know, always very friendly and always very helpful, you know, because I'd never driven, nor had Frank driven a 3-ton truck before. And these were 4-wheel drive vehicles, quite big, heavy.
Now,
vehicles.
Tell me about them. What were they like? Which make were they?
They're Chevrolets, made in Canada.
And they were 4-ton?
3-ton.
3-ton, sorry.
Yeah, 3-ton.
And what were they like to drive, these 3-ton Chevrolets? I mean.
Heavy, yeah, cumbersome things, I suppose you might say. Yeah, there was cumbersome lorries, you know. Very, you know, steering was heavy. Well, because I was four-wheel driving, the steering on a four-wheel drive vehicle them days was always heavier than the normal thing. But, well, you know, after a little while you get used to things, don't you? You know, you have to adapt yourself to these things.
And, did you get any practice in driving them in desert or rocky
no
ground.
No, not at all. No, Di Lover and the corporal just said, well, come on. When we got to there, we met the sergeant major, greeted us, a man called Ferguson. He greeted us and told us what a shambles we were, and he was going to brighten us up, and he did how he did. And then we were taken to our sections, and that was just Frank and I had joined this section, and Di Lovering just said, okay, come on, I'll take your truck. Have you driven one of these before? I said, no, and he said, okay. Also, Frank got in, and he went and had a drive round with Di, and then he come back, and then I had a drive round, and that was that, and then got on to about the maintenance of the vehicle. Every 3 days, we had to grease it. This was, I think there was about 30 nipples to grease on it, and a transmission, there was a gearbox, a transmission, which was to bring in the front-wheel drive, the four-wheel drive, and a universal axle at the back. It was quite a job, actually, doing that. And you had only had a hand grease gun, you know, small ones at that. But every third day we had to do that because, you know, there was constant inspections at that particular time of your vehicle, you know.
So what were you doing? I mean, you joined them. Where were you living? Were you based at El Haman?
Yeah, that's right. That was where we were
What
based.
Was your living accommodation like?
We just slept in the back of the truck. Just slept in the back of the truck, and you dug a slit trench beside it, and the trucks were in pairs about 150 yards apart, spread all over the desert. This was a case of air raids and that. And I saw a slit trench aside, but you just slept in the back of your truck.
And what was it like? Was it comfortable in the back of the truck? I mean, would you have a? Would
you got used to it. Got used to it. You know, we had about 3 or 4 blankets, I suppose, because and it gets cold in the desert at night, so we'd sleep on the. We'd have one blanket on the floor, and these were metal body trucks as well. There wasn't wooden, so that was a bit cold at first. But we was always much happier if we had a load on. If we had a load of cases of milk or meat or tea or whatever, you know, because we could sleep on the cardboard then. And we'd also try to get some cardboard at times so that we could sleep on that because that was a lot warmer.
Now, what about the air raid precautions? You mentioned so you'd distribute the lorries about the desert. You'd spread them out.
Yeah, that's right. It was about in pairs, facing opposite ways, so that if you had to, there was a raid on and you had to move. I mean, if they were both facing the same way, well, to distance themselves very quickly would take a lot longer. But facing opposite ways, you just drove off. And so you spread the spread out. But I think that only happened on a couple of occasions.
And what about the slit? Can you describe the slit trench you dig? How would you go about digging it, and how deep the rest, you know?
Well, I had a spade, because we all had a spade in the desert, because you had to dig the trucks out sometimes. We had a spade, so it was about 6 foot long, I suppose. I was about 6 foot, and about 2 foot deep, and about, 18 inches wide, something like that, yeah.
But you wouldn't sleep in them, you'd sleep in the lorry.
Oh, yeah, we'd sleep in the lorry, yeah. But, I mean, you know, so if we'd had a couple of planes that had been over and there'd been a bit of strafing and that, we might decide to move our blankets into the slit trench, you know, into our slit trenches.
Now, did you ever have to dig in, at this stage, dig in the lorries? You know what I mean by digging in the engine so that they run into a
bay? No, never had to dig them in there.
Right, now, so we've got you joining the unit, but what was the unit doing? You know, you were 288 Company, Royal Army Service Corps. What were they doing based at El Hamam?
We were going back down, 5 mile east we were going, along the Mediterranean, back to, in the direction of Alexandria for about 5 mile, to a railhead, which was Berg El Arab, which was just a small railway siding or station. And from there, we'd go down, probably leaving El Hamam at 6 or half past 6 in the morning, and getting down there and then backing up to the trucks and loading bread, petrol, ammunition, foods. Another thing we used to carry was 20 goats. We sometimes had to carry 20 goats. And my poor friend Frankie Brooks got a load of goats one day, got 20 on, and when he got to the BSD, the base supply depot, he only had 19. One had got out the back of the truck, and for that he had 7 days jankers. But we always said, how are you supposed to drive a truck over the desert and look after the goats as well? We didn't know, but there you are. This was always done, of course, in case you flogged them to the Arabs, because, I mean, they was always willing to do a deal.
Now, I will come back to that. So you were picking up the stuff at the Berg El Arab railhead. Yeah. Where were you taking it to?
To, well, base supply depots or DIDs. Now,
what does DID?
It was the Divisional Increment Depot or something like that. But it was just a general. A base supply depot was to a big base depot or direct to the division, who had their own smaller supply depots, or to them, that's what we're talking about. And, you know, one of the things we went a lot to was the 4th Indian Division, which was in 30 Corps, of which we were members of 30 Corps, and also the 52nd Highland, they were in 30 Corps, so we went quite a lot to them. I can't remember the others we went to.
What was it like? How would you go? I mean, would you go in convoy? Or would you go as individuals?
Oh, we would go as individuals, because I think at first, when we first started going, we would certainly be tailing another lorry. But after a while, we would know. You know, there were various tracks, and even after going a few times, it might not look much in the desert to other people. Once you've done it a few times, you would recognise certain hollows and mounds and things that you do. And this was probably going, I suppose, up to 30, 40 mile, perhaps 20, 30, 40 mile to different depots or places.
So it was about 5 miles to the Berg El Arab railhead, and then 40 or 50 miles forward.
Yeah, 30 or 40 miles. Forward. And then to the divisions or the base supply depot.
And did you have a co-driver or mate in
it? No, it was on our own.
So you're just on your, you're really quite isolated.
Oh, yeah, you're really on your own. And oh, yeah, no,
what about the loading and unloading? From what I gather, you wouldn't do that. You just sit in your...
No, we loaded the van. It was sometimes carried onto the truck, as it were, but we loaded it. We actually loaded the truck, because we were responsible for the number we had on, because that, when we got to where we deliver, that would be checked off. So we would sign for 50 cartons, and we had to deliver 50 cartons. So we always had to load our own truck, you know. There were certain ways we sometimes load a truck where we could get 51 on, unbeknown to anybody, if it was perhaps tins of fruit or something like that. We'd nick a case like that, you know, we could... And then when we got back to our section, the six of us, well, we'd just open the case and share them around. You know, might be corned beef or whatever we could. But it was very, very tough, because there was the police there, you know, the what they call them, CIP or something like that.
I'm still. I understand. So would you actually physically have to put the things on? In other words, they'd bring it to you, and then you'd physically load the back of the
we
lorry.
We would physically load the lorry. Yeah.
Yourself.
We would physically load the lorry. Yeah.
So you.
And we would physically unload it to the back of the lorry. You understand what I mean?
And then they'd take it off. Yeah, it'd be checked off.
Sometimes we would unload the whole lot. Yeah, sometimes. Yeah.
And was there a way of loading the lorry to avoid too much weight on one axle or too much weight on one side, things like that? Did you know about that?
You just loaded. They would say, okay, you can take 50 cartons of these. You know, they would tell us, all right, you're going to take, 50's your load or whatever. So we always knew what our maximum. Yeah, and we'd just load from the front of the truck to the back of the truck. You know, making sure you've got some weight over the back wheels. And also, we'd never ever, if we only had 20 cars, we'd never ever load them just at the back of the truck, because that would just swing about and, lift the nose up, especially if you was having going over some bad ground.
What was the terrain like you were driving over? I mean, were you on roads, rough tracks or desert?
Well, there was only one road, and that was the coastal road. Sometimes we was on the coastal road, but most of the time we was on the desert. Now, when I say desert, I'm not talking about soft sand desert, although at times we did have to use four-wheel drive to get through softer sand. But generally, it was hard desert with some rocks on it. And so you always had to watch where you were driving, because you didn't want to hit a rock.
And I mean, what were there any particular skills about driving in, other than keeping your eyes open for a big rock? I mean,
yeah. No, I don't think so, really. I don't think so. No.
And soft sand, very rare in those areas.
Well, we did have soft sand, but I mean, we would try to drive in areas where there wasn't soft sand, because we didn't want the aggravation of, because we sometimes had that spray, but we used to have to dig ourselves out.
How did you clear yourself from sand? Can you just tell us how you do it? So you've driven into some soft sand by mistake. You've got stuck. How do you get out?
Well, what we would all do would be to start digging to the rear of the four wheel.
But what about you of the four wheel the Chevrolet? I mean, tell me what you think of it as now you're actually using it. What was it like?
Well, it was. First of all, they only reckon they'd done 10,000 miles before the engine was burnt out. The tyres were a big risk. We was always having punctures because of the rough terrain we was going over. The engines always seemed to want a lot of oil. The engines used a lot of oil, but as I say, they had to work pretty hard. But they was quite comfortable. I suppose nice upright sitting position to drive, and you had a cushion above you if you went over a bump and you got shot up out of your seat, where there was a cushion to protect your head, although sometimes that still hurt a little bit. So. But that was okay.
Were the problems serious, the engine problems? I mean, would you find yourself broken down, or was it just a matter that you had to keep an eye on it, watch the maintenance, and then replace it at the right time?
Yeah. No, we didn't break down very often, because the discipline over maintenance was so strict. You for your own good. I mean, for your own good, you was doing all what you had to do, because you didn't want to be broken down in the middle of the desert. I mean,
how would you change the tyre if it went on a great big lorry with a load on, if it went to the desert?
Well, we had a jack. We used to have a jack and just jack the wheel up.
And that would jack the load.
Sometimes you'd get, if there was somebody else, you'd use two jacks. That would make it going up a bit easier. But no, it was bereft of difficulties, but I mean, it was something that if you wanted to move on, you had to do.
You wouldn't have to unload it before you jacked it up then?
No. Well, again, you just done what you had to at the time. If you wasn't having too much trouble getting it up, okay. But if you would try to shift some of the load over to the other side of the truck so that you could lift it up. But you had to be careful not to put too much stuff on there, because one, of course, it could have toppled over, or two, you could have broke the springs on that side,
And I presume you'd carry a spare wheel with
you? We carried a spare wheel. I'll tell you a story later on about that, but you carried a spare wheel.
And anything else about, so anything else that, that any other regular duties you had at that time?
We went back to Alexandria once. We took a, we four of us went back to Alexandria and took a load of stale bread back. I don't quite know whether the Arabs were trying it on there, sent a load of stale bread up, or whether the truck got lost, but it wasn't acceptable at the BSDs and the DIDs, so four of us took it all back. But that was quite nice to go and see a bit of civilization, but apart from that, no, there was nothing. Just doing that sort of thing, you know.
Now, what about the dummy airfield? Where was it? Tell me about that.
Well, it was adjacent to the railway siding or station.
So it was a Burj Al Arab.
Burj Al Arab.
And what was this dummy?
This was this dummy airfield which had wooden Spitfires on it and wooden guns, and they used to move them about every now and again. But just, I suppose, to fool the enemy, because we didn't have the amount of aircraft. And life in the desert, particularly with German aircraft, was blooming hazardous, because, they had the Stukas and the old Messerschmitt, but the Stukas were the one that used to terrify you coming out of the sky.
Now, did you... that's the next question. Tell me about the air. Were you ever attacked from the air while you were doing any of these trips during this phase?
My truck was never hit.
But were you attacked?
Tell
me what a German air attack could be like. And was it always Stukas or was it other things?
Well, sometimes there was Messerschmitts. The Messerschmitts wasn't bad, because you just got down somewhere and they sprayed the, you know, they strafed and that. And it wasn't too bad.
So you'd get out of the cab then?
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you were driving along and you saw a truck up in front suddenly stop and a bloke jump out, you'd jump out as well.
You'd
jump and get out as well. I mean, you know, it was, you know, talk about being city wise in London, you could become desert wise, you know, to read the signs, you know, so that's what you would do. But the Stukas were the worst.
Hang on, when you got out, what would you do? I mean, would you
run away from the truck.
You'd get away from the truck.
Get away from the truck, yeah.
And would you lie in a hole?
Well, if there was something, yeah, but mainly to get away from the truck.
And would the Messerschmitts normally spray the trucks, not you?
Yeah, they would spray the truck, because what they used to try to do, and that too, was come down the road, you know, so they could swoop in and do a few trucks and then out again.
So as soon as you got away, but you... Was there ever any thought to driving off in the truck into the desert, you know, off the track, or no?
No, just get out of the truck.
Now, why were Stuka tracks worse? Tell me what.
Because the noise, and just terrifying noise. Now, I'm speaking of somebody who spent two and a half years in the air raids in the centre of London, so I've heard bombs and everything else, but the Stuka was the most frightening thing in the world, because it was so loud you felt sure that it was going to hit you. Not about the bombs it was going to drop, but, you know, it was as though it was going to hit you, you know. And
what, the aeroplane was going
to hit you? Oh, yeah, because the noise was so intense, you know.
What was it like? It's difficult to describe a noise, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, yeah, it is difficult to describe, but just a screaming, roaring noise, and because it was made to make a noise, wasn't it? It was made to make a noise, so which it did. But that's what I found was the worst. But I should say, no, we were more prone to air attack in the desert than we were in other theatres of war, you know.
But you weren't hit.
No, I wasn't hit. No.
Now, what about looking at your living conditions, you slept in the back of the truck, but I forgot to ask you, what food would you get? What food?
Well, we had a cookhouse. The platoon had a cookhouse. Each platoon had a cookhouse, and our cook was a lad called Bashy, we used to call him. And, we would have not much for breakfast. I think we used to have some bread and jam or something like that for breakfast, but... And we would have cheesy on toast if we were back for lunch. And then of an evening we would have M&V, a meat and vegetables out of a tin. By the cook used to do that. or corned beef stew. We used to have corned beef fritters. Biscuits, we always had plenty of biscuits. Hard
what type
biscuits.
Of biscuits? I mean,
well, the hard biscuits, yeah, we didn't have sweet biscuits, just hard biscuits.
Yeah, like dog biscuits.
Yeah, well, yeah, I suppose. Like cream crackers, only a bit tougher than that. You know, like cream crackers, are a bit tougher than that. A bit harder to eat. Yeah, I might.
It all sounds quite dry and salty, sir. Corned beef, dry biscuits.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, was it the right sort of diet, do you think? Or was there no choice?
Well, no choice, was there? I mean, some of the, I always think it's a bit funny, some of the most enjoyable meals I had, not enjoyable is the wrong thing to say, but was when sometimes when we was up at the guns and we was waiting to be unloaded, and we'd had a good day on some corned beef, and we would open some biscuits up and sat there with a tin of corned beef and digging the biscuits into the corned beef, and that was really wonderful. Or if we had some M&V, we'd put some M&V on the exhaust of the truck, so at the time we got there, or within a little short time, it was hot enough, and we used to eat it like that. Although we ate it cold a lot of times.
So you didn't object to the food from the summit?
Oh, I could never find much problem with the army food.
You didn't get bored with it?
I just accepted it. I mean, we were brought up to accept small mercies, and whatever's there, you've got to accept. So I couldn't find much to complain about. I'm trying to think of some other things that old Bashy used to do, but I can't. What did he do with porridge? He used to do something with porridge. I can't think of what he'd done with porridge.
What about your tea? What was army tea like in the desert? And how? And did you brew your own as well?
Yeah,
did
wonderful. Yeah.
Tell me.
Lots of times. Yeah. Well, so we used to have these petrol in flimsy cans, which was 4 gallon tin cans. So we used to cut one of them in half, pour some petrol in it, because it was empty, cut in half. But we used to pour some petrol in it, and then on top of that, put another flimsy with some water in. And set light to the petrol, and the water would boil, and then we'd throw our tea in and make our tea like that. And have carnation milk we used to use, and we had sugar, and dirty mugs. Our mugs was always dirty. Well, we never washed the mugs. And why we didn't get dysentery or etc. more often, I don't know. But no, and we used to enjoy that cup of tea.
Was
or
it very
mug of
sweet?
Tea.
Did you have it very
well,
sweet?
Well, I've never been much. I like sweets and things, but never been much. For sweet tea, so it didn't bother me if we didn't have any sugar, but sometimes we didn't have any sugar.
And was tea very important to you? I mean, people seem to get...
Oh, yeah, yeah, oh, yeah. Well, because we never had lemonade, you know.
Would you brew it up yourself when you were on a trip, or was it just...
Well, if we were back at the camp, back at El Alamein, the cookhouse would supply tea, but not all day long. I mean, they weren't cooking tea, but we could also have our own brew if we was back at the camp. But if we was out on our own or two or three trucks together, yeah, we'd suddenly get the old brew can out and have a brew up. And
did you get a rum ration?
Only a couple of times we got a rum ration in the desert, but I didn't like the rum, so I used to give it to my friend Frank. He used to drink my rum, but I couldn't stand it. It was bloody awful.
What did, just the taste?
Oh, the taste, yeah. Oh, dear.
And what about cigarettes?
We used to have V cigarettes, which were made in India. Now, we used to get 50 a week. Sometimes there was a naffy van came round, but not very often. Or if it came round, you probably weren't in camp. So you made do with 50 of these V cigarettes a week.
Now, was that enough for you? You were a smoker, obviously.
I was a smoker, yeah. But, well, again, you know, I used to think, well, that's all I've got, and I'd spread them out, you know,
Now, what were they like? I mean, were they as good as the ones you were used to in London?
Well, no, they were small cigarettes, like Players Weights or Woodbines. You know, the smaller type of cigarettes, because no filter on. But, yeah, I didn't seem to mind them so much. You know, I haven't got bad memories of smoking V cigarettes.